impeccable imbibers of imagination. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 188, and I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your talkative, terrific team of two times two, taking in tacos, tamales, tostadas, and taquitos.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
We ate Mexican food today.
We did, in fact, just all have tacos.
Taco Friday.
Yeah. And today's episode is brought to you by Harry's. What makes Harry's special? German-engineered five-blade cartridges, close, comfortable shave, no cuts, no burns, and of course you have seen our Good Job Brain logo, so it's a nice pairing that we have a shaving company pairing with us since we have the nice little mustache as our logo. The mustache boom is still going strong.
Isn't that the opposite of
No, you have to shape it.
Yes, it's defined by the negative space.
Yeah. Wow. at harrys.com, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com, you can get a lot of your razor needs at half the price of what they sell in large retail stores. And these are, Harry's was built by the same people who started Warby Parker, the glasses place. They made it easy to get glasses. Now they're making it easy for all of us with shaving too. You got a new kit.
I did. I got both the nice orange Truman handle kit, which
I like to call it Good Job Rain.
I like to call it Good Job Rain Orange. Yeah, I said that when it showed up. Yeah, I've been subtly calling it that.
Yeah.
Co-opting there. And also the nice silver handle. Yeah, I like the new handles a lot.
So why pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades when you can get them half the price at harrys.com? And you can get, of course, our favorite is the starter handle for $15. You get the razor handle, 3 razor blades, moisturizing shave cream. That's for $15. And we have a special promo that's $5 off your first purchase. So go to harrys.com and use the code BRAIN.
Well, it's that time again. It's time for our recurring segment about things that we may or may not have gotten wrong, and we like to call that.
Actually,
yes, this is a listener mail. Actually, and it opened my eyes.
Oh,
so this is from
those are the best kind.
Nick, let me read his email.
Wake up, sheeple.
Yeah. In episode 56, your body is a wonderland. Chris shared an old wives' tale.
Mm-hmm.
One refers to waiting 30 minutes before swimming after eating. We all heard that, right?
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, we're going way back in the archive. Yeah, I like it. Okay.
The old, actually.
30 minutes before swimming after eating. I've always heard that.
Okay.
So Nick says, although it is true that it won't necessarily cause you to drown, it is encouraged to wait 30 minutes because it's important to allow yourself time to digest your food. We also heard that. That's a lot of people, all your blood is rushing to your stomach.
Like any kind of activity, like running laps as well.
Why is this important? Nick says, the reason is if you were to happen to vomit immediately after eating, there is a greater chance of choking on larger chunks of undigested pieces of food. There have been children that have eaten a lot, then swam immediately after, vomited, and choked on large chunks of food. So yes, the digestion makes sense. The follow-up is because you don't want to choke on large pieces of food.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Nick.
Now we know.
This is why I only have smoothies before I go swimming. So, you know, I can just gorge myself on smoothies and there's no choking hazard whatsoever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ice cream.
It's just considerate for other people, too. When I have to clean my smoothie vomit out of the pool. Yeah. It's terrible.
You just gotta.
Yeah.
And also, I have another quick fan mail, fan tweet. Megs tweeted us. This is really cute. Beaver is our spirit animal.
Yeah.
Our mascot. And, you know, the facts just keep on coming, man. Beavers. Treasure trove of facts. Beavers have clear eyelids.
Wow. Okay. All right. So they can see while they're swimming underwater.
Yes.
Okay.
That is why. So they can see.
Classy.
Underwater.
Wow. Nature's goggles. Wow.
Yes. What a magnificent
beaver, man. Beaver's what a well-adapted animal. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the teeth, the tail, the swimming, the clear eyelids for goggles. Yeah.
Yep.
This is.
They were going through the evolution stuff real fast. Like
they're Pokemons.
Yeah, they are.
Well, thank you guys for writing in. And without further ado, let's jump into our general trivia segment, Pup Quiz, Hot Shot. All right. And you guys have your barnyard buzzers. And I have a random Trivial Pursuit card picked from the box. And this is, it's weird. So there's like a whole 1990s Trivial Pursuit edition.
Uh-huh.
And then they have individual years within that set, right? So we had 1995 before. Yeah. I've only seen 1995 cards.
I wonder if, is there maybe only like a 1995 edition?
That box is deep.
Yeah.
We should churn and cycle that box.
A big lottery ticket, bingo machine.
Ooh. Yep.
Giant thing. Just all these cards.
There's some trivia on the bottom that's just going stale.
Yeah. It's all right. This one is 1995.
Okay.
Okay.
1995. Pink Wedge. What TV?
What version of Windows was it? Sorry.
I actually checked first to see if that question showed up again. What TV comic was deemed politically incorrect for blurting out the F word in front of Bill and Hillary Clinton, that is? At a media dinner. Oh, Dana.
Bill Maher?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is Bill Maher.
Politically incorrect is kind of the hint there.
Oh. Yeah.
That seems like something he would do.
Yellow Wedge. What Pixar release was the first feature film to be entirely computer animated? Colin.
Toy Story.
Correct.
It's always Toy Story.
Yeah.
Broke a lot of barriers.
Yeah.
Brown Wedge. What retailer hoped ads featuring Rosie O'Donnell and Penny Marshall would inspire folks to shop with a buddy?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Who was this?
Chris.
TJ Maxx.
Kind of close.
Oh, really?
Incorrect. Colin.
Old Navy?
Incorrect.
Was it Payless Shoes?
Incorrect.
No. Wait, hold on. Is it J.C. Penney?
Kmart.
Oh,
Kmart. I remember Kmart. Them in commercials, but I don't remember what they were selling. Yeah,
bring a friend.
Yeah, you guys were all so close.
Yeah.
All right, Orange Wedge. What was the Boston Chicken chain renamed after branching out into other entrees? Mm-hmm. Everybody.
Boston Market.
Yeah.
Huh.
I didn't know that.
Never. I don't think I've ever been to it prior to the name change. Hmm. Prior to.
Yeah, I didn't know it was a. It was a Boston Chicken. Mm-hmm. Green Wedge. What trial evidence inspired Alan Dershowitz's lyrical analogy? They tried to shove a slipper on a foot and it didn't fit. Oh,
everybody.
The glove in the O.J. Simpson trial glove.
It says a glove.
Okay.
Sure.
A glove.
We all know. Yeah.
We all know. All right, last question, Blue Wedge. What veteran of the video Terrific Sex was tapped to pen Sex for Dummies?
Okay.
Colin.
Dr. Ruth Westheimer.
Correct.
Okay.
Didn't she have a crazy background? She was like a sniper.
Ski sniper. She was trained as a sniper, yes, in the early Israeli Defense Forces.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. She never shot anybody, but she was trained as a sniper. Yeah.
That's cool. Well, she's tiny.
My old book, a new version of which is coming out. My old book being called Power Up, How Japanese Video Games Gave
the New Old
Extra
Book.
Life. The new old book.
The new original.
The new originals. So October 19th, this book is going to be out. And then on October 20th, I have been invited to do a reading and a signing at Green Apple Books here in San Francisco, which is great because I used to live right in that area. I used to go to Green Apple Books. It's the coolest, most awesome bookstore. I'm so excited it's going to be like finally out again. It has a brand new cover by Karen Chu.
It's lovely.
A designer of some renown.
Yes.
So October 20th.
Have you ever done a book
signing? Basically never.
Have you ever
done? Because when the book came out in the first place, I was really very unknown. You know what I mean? They didn't really set up a book signing for it.
Yeah. What about reading of a book? Like public reading. Are you going to do a funny voice?
You're breaking all kinds of barriers.
Someone wanted you doing a Mario voice.
No, I'm just having trouble figuring out, deciding like what it is I'm going to read.
That's true.
Yeah. I'll just read the copyright notice and release.
Licensed XCV.
And then, like, close the book very, quietly. And be like, thank you.
And then leave.
Yeah.
What is this ISBN number?
Right.
Yeah.
May not be reproduced in whole or in part without the express written consent.
Now, this is important. Take a note.
And then we'll clap. We're like, wow.
Incredible. Yeah. Yes. Performance art.
Well, I'll be there. I'll try to be there.
Oh, thanks.
It's a little bit too far.
You just dialed back your definite. I'll make an effort.
Yeah. You know, I'll put it on the calendar.
Life gets more complicated when you get older.
I know. I'm not even sure I can make it.
I don't know my schedule. File, I won't be there.
No, it's going to be fun.
So, local Good Job, Ray fans, you know, catch Chris's dramatic book reading may or may not be in a Mario voice on October 20th. All right. Well, let's get the show started.
Have an episode.
Colin.
All right. So
what are we talking about?
Well, I'm gonna start with a little bit of a story here. So I think it's been long enough now. We can talk about it. I've had enough emotional space to deal with it. It's been a little over a month. Our hometown, Golden State Warriors, lost the NBA Finals to the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Colin, why are you spoiling it?
You had it on TiVo.
I was going to get around to watching.
Someday, I was going to see. I've been hearing a lot about this LeBron kid. it was an exciting finals. I do wish the Warriors had won, but hats off to the Cavs. They played great. They have a guy you may have heard of on the team of some renown. Yeah. His name is LeBron.
Oh, he was in Trainwreck.
Yeah, the guy in Trainwreck. So in this finals, a player named James set a record for making a sixth straight NBA finals, or I should say shared a record in the modern era. No other player in the modern era has made six consecutive NBA finals in a row. All right. Wow. And I don't mean LeBron James. I'm talking about James Jones. James Jones has been a teammate on the Cleveland Cavaliers for the last 2 years when they made the NBA Finals.
Oh.
And he was a teammate of LeBron James on the Miami Heat the 4 years prior to that when they made the NBA Finals. So these two players, just LeBron James and James Jones, who is safe to say not a household name, even among good NBA fans, they made this this modern record together, like since the Bill Russell era, the only players to make six straight NBA finals. And so, his name came up a lot during the finals as kind of like, oh, it's this little footnote to this quirk. Like everyone's giving LeBron this credit, like LeBron, man, he's amazing, six straight NBA finals. And it's like, oh, you know, James Jones also did it too.
Yeah.
It's not really just a coincidence. When LeBron James met James Jones when they were playing for the Heat, he fell in love with him as a player. This is my guy. This guy, this is a quote from LeBron James. He's the greatest teammate I've ever had.
Aww.
Okay. So when LeBron left the Miami Heat to go to the Cleveland Cavaliers, he said, I want you. Come join me. He said to management, he's like, look, I'm coming back.
We can make it happen.
You got to make this happen. This is my guy. We're going to find a spot on the team for him. And sure enough, they did.
Huh.
And so it's this great case of if you're a truly great transcendent player like LeBron James and you identify somebody who's, you know, your friend or your buddy or a really solid teammate, you can kind of make that happen. You know what I mean? You can say to management, this guy's coming with me. And sure enough, you know what? Like all praise to James Jones for being a great teammate and hitting the shot when he's open and being the kind of guy that LeBron James wants to bring along with him.
Whoa.
So then I was thinking more about just this idea of like the sort of the friend in sports, how you can really be a kingmaker here. It's like the sport BFF. And this is not the only case of that for sure. There are a lot of cases of superstars over the years in all the pro sports who have, you know, one teammate who they just love to practice with or always has their back in the locker room or, you know, kind of make sure that no one's talking trash about them or maybe is their enforcer on the court, you know. And they don't always get the glory, but they will ride along for the rings and the trophies as the other player goes. So I thought the idea of best friends and BFF and all that comes with it might be a good topic for our show.
So this week, BFFs forever! Forever.
See you next summer.
Hags.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do you
So I have a fun little quiz for you guys. I hope it's fun. I think it's going to be
fun.
We're
all fingers crossed. Yep.
Fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. We'll give it a go. We'll see what happens.
The worst quiz for you guys.
I mean, it's about TV best friends, people on TV shows that we've probably all watched.
Yeah.
Who had best friends. And I'm going to tell you their first names.
Fictional
TV shows.
Characters.
Yes. Okay. Not TV show. Right. Not reality shows.
Gotcha. Okay.
TV shows. Fictional characters from TV only, not movies. They are best friends on the show. Mm. I want you guys to tell me what show they came from.
Oh.
All right.
Buzz in. Well, I bet we'll get through this real quick.
All right.
Let's see. All right. Just kicking it off. Mary and Rhoda. Colin.
The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Mary Tyler Moore Show. How about Meredith and Christina?
Meredith. It's so weird when it's first name.
Is that Grey's Anatomy?
Grey's Anatomy. Okay. Chris.
Oh. Yes. Meredith, yeah.
Yes. JD and Turk. Chris.
Scrubs.
What about Nick and Schmidt?
Nick?
Karen.
New Girl.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Of course. Nick and Schmitty. All right. Of course.
That was just a unique name.
Yep. Yeah, okay.
DJ and Kimmy. we'll do Colin.
I think Chris had it first, but I will gladly say Full House.
Full House. Yes.
No, also Fuller House.
Oh, you're right.
Two
acceptable answers.
Yes. Yes. Karen and Jack.
Oh, that is Will and Grace.
Oh!
Yeah. Yep. How about Leslie and Ann. Yeah.
Wow, it's so hard with just first names.
Colin.
That's Parks and Recreation.
Parks and Recreation. Oh. Maybe it's like when you tap out a song and you're like, "Oh, this is the Happy Birthday song," and everybody's just like, "This is just noise."
Right. Yep.
How about Patsy and Adina? We'll give it to Karen.
Absolutely Karen. Fabulous.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
And the new movie's coming out.
Yeah.
One last one. Max and Caroline.
Max.
Caroline.
This show is about these two people.
Huh. Oh, so it must be their last names.
Caroline in the City.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I wish it's not. That's really good.
Max and Carol. The show is about them. It's titled after them.
But it's only like a
two broke girls.
Oh, my
God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's a girl. I was like, I wonder if Max is a girl or a guy.
Oh, yeah.
Solved it.
Nice.
Good job.
Woo!
Best friends.
Colin, when you said BFFs, there was one photograph that popped into my head, and I knew that I wanted to do something about the greatest pair of best friends forever of our time.
Oh yeah.
Which would be, of course,
you're keeping me on my toes.
It's Sirs Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
With
whom we all know are absolute best buddies, and in fact love to show it on social media, because they will go to Coney Island and play skee ball together.
They're awesome.
And they cook dinner for each other. It is magical. And so I don't know if they're both Order of British Empire. Are they?
I know Sir Patrick Stewart.
Oh, I know Sir Ian McKellen.
Yeah, they are.
So knights and pals. I thought, oh, great. I should do something about the movies that they have done together.
Wasn't there only just two?
Yeah. So I scrapped that idea.
Yeah.
It literally would have been just a X-Men quiz. Yeah. And so I got rid of that idea. And then I started thinking about, well, what is the common thread that kind of connects these two guys? And one of those threads, you know what? It's the Royal Shakespeare Company. That's what immediately popped into my head. The Royal Shakespeare Company being, and I'll give you the very brief rundown of this. Its history goes back to 1879, and the performers in the theaters that were putting on Shakespeare's plays in the theaters that are in Stratford-upon-Avon, from which Shakespeare hailed. And so they formalized it in around the 60s as this one, company of players that would do the absolute, they are the pinnacle of Shakespeare, right? Like, you go to see the Royal Shakespeare Company in London, that's
legit.
It. That is the best Shakespeare. Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen both had performed with the Royal Shakespeare Company.
So that's how they know each other?
I don't know if that's how they know each other, but I mean, it is sort of a tight-knit, group of people, right?
Yeah.
So, with all that talent, many of the Royal Shakespeare Company players would go on to then be in Hollywood films, television shows, people that you know. So this is a quiz about that group
of
people who have been in the Royal Shakespeare Company.
And I assume it's super hard to get into.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
they're like, you gotta be the best of the best.
Echelon. Okay. Yeah, right. So I will tell you a little fact about an actor or an actress who played what role they played in the Royal Shakespeare Company production. Maybe give you another couple little clues about who they are, and you have to guess what actor or actress I'm talking about. You all have your paper. You all have your pens. This is a write-down quiz. Yay. So it's everybody against everybody in a battle to the death. So, with the Royal Shakespeare Company, he played Shylock in The Merchant of Venice, and his other roles on film have included Enrico Salvatore Razzo Rizzo, Ted Kramer, and Raymond Babbitt.
Do you guys all know?
I know.
I know from one of the roles, only one of the roles.
That's, you know, I gave you three chances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think I know. Now I'm starting to get shaky.
Well, I was like, oh.
I'm 100%.
Rizzo, as in from Greece, so it's Stalker Channing. You know, like, I was like, wait, that's not Enrico.
Edward Fell. Yeah, okay. All right, answers up. Karen says Tom Wilkinson. Colin says Dustin Hoffman, and Dana has drawn a bear.
No.
And then below the bear is Dustin Hoffman. Yes, it's Dustin Hoffman. Those were his roles from Midnight Cowboy, Kramer versus Kramer.
Oh my god.
Rain Man. Yes.
Yeah. Kramer versus Kramer is how I got it.
Okay. I put it in
so
the middle.
So they're not all British.
I didn't want to stick it at the end.
Yay.
A lot of these people are British. Okay, here we go. This actor, director, and many other things is very closely associated with making film versions of Shakespeare plays. He has directed 5 of them. And in 2015, he directed a live action Cinderella for Disney.
What's up now?
I don't know. I'm guessing that we all got it.
All right, let's see the answers up. Dana says Kenneth Branagh. Colin, Kenneth Branagh. Karen, Kenneth Branagh. Yes, it is Kenneth Branagh.
What's up, Karen?
Hamlet
with the Royal Shakespeare Company, like, 4 times? Yeah. 5 times? Many, many times.
Yeah.
Very closely associated to the, in the 1990s with being the epitome of the...
Yes.
I definitely...
He did.
Stage.
Yeah. He was Professor Gilderoy Lockhart.
Also true. Yeah, also true. And, you know, Karen, you mentioned that, and there will be some Harry Potter actors coming up in this quiz, you might imagine. But before we get there, she played with the RSC. She played Cordelia in King Lear. Roles on television after that include Dr. Elizabeth Corday in ER and River Song in Doctor Who.
What is her name?
She was in something. I just listened to a book where she was the narrator, and I was like, oh, it's River Song. Who is it? This is going to be sad. I don't know. I'm not going to retrieve this.
I don't know. I was going to give you a hint, but then it looks like Colin got it. So
I didn't get it. I know the first name. What's, I don't know the last.
Okay.
What's the hint?
I'm not writing a joke, necessarily.
You want the hint?
Yeah.
Does everybody want the hint?
Sure.
Does everybody agree?
Sure.
She was in King Lear, and her name has either King or Lear somewhere in it. Still no, it's okay, time is up. Oh my goodness. Karen has Alex and then a blank and then it says King underneath it. Colin has Christine, something, but it's crossed out, it says Kingston.
Oh!
Dana has King Lear. If you put it all together, you get Alex Kingston. And you know what? You each get, half a point because I can do that. She also played Cordelia in King Lear, and then she played Viola in Twelfth Night. And most recently, you might know her as Lady Olenna Tyrell on Game of Thrones.
Yo, what is her? I don't know.
What
her name.
Is
wow.
her name?
Oh my god! I need more caffeine. I think
I can't. I like. even if
not even caffeine.
No. I was obsessed with Game of Thrones recaps, and people were always like, "Oh, she... yes, Queen to this lady. Like, what is her name?
What is her name?" You have the chance to write down something if you want. No hints this time. All right, paper's up. Karen has written the letter D. Colin has written Diana Rigg.
Yes, that's her name.
And that is her name. And Dan has written the Queen. Yes, Colin gets a point for...
I remember it was D.
Diana Rigg. Yes, Shakespearean actress. All right.
She's so good.
She's great. Yeah. She's great. Another person who played the character Shylock in 1960 on stage and 2 years later would go on to play the title role in 1962's Lawrence of Arabia.
My favorite.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I'm throwing Karen one here, was what this apparently is.
Do you know why he's my favorite?
I don't know.
No, yeah.
Colin says Peter O'Toole. Karen says Peter O'Toole.
No.
Dana put Laurence Olivier. No, it's Peter O'Toole, indeed. Yeah. Why is he your favorite?
Because he was in King Ralph when I was a kid, and I was like, that guy rocks.
Yes, Peter O'Toole.
My dad was like, you know, he was in a really big movie called Lawrence of Arabia. So, I was like, I don't care. He's in King Ralph.
So here's some trivia. Here's some Peter O'Toole. Here's some Peter O'Trivia. He was nominated 8 times for Best Actor in a Leading Role, but he never won.
Oh.
They gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award, but he never won a competitive Oscar.
Wow.
And it was 8 times.
That's
and
painful.
That is the most times somebody has been nominated for Best Actor in a Leading Role and not won.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's good trivia.
I gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you tend to get it within a few years of your death, generally. Yes. Yeah.
So here's some topical current events. This one-time Royal Shakespeare Company actor will star in... very soon, later this year, he will star in the upcoming remake of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, playing the character, the criminologist.
Oh, right. Oh.
This one-time Royal Shakespeare Company actor will star in the upcoming remake of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, playing the character of the criminologist.
What else was he in?
Anything?
Man, I know who's playing Rocky Horror. Yeah. Who's playing Janet, I think.
Frankenfurter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who is playing the, and you know the role of the criminologist?
Yeah, the guy
right?
in the wheelchair.
The guy in the wheel. No. No, it's the guy who's relating the events of the film.
Yeah.
He's sitting behind a, yeah, he's not in a wheelchair.
Isn't he? No.
Dr. Scott is in a wheelchair.
Yeah. Oh.
When was this person active in the Royal Shakespeare Company? Did you tell us that? Or
nope.
Is that not? Okay.
I did not tell
All
you
right.
That.
Okay.
I did not
okay.
tell you that.
Okay.
Have you looked at the IMDb page?
For Rocky Horror.
I mean, the person in question just turned 70 years old. So, Donald I mean, Trump. I don't know if that's going to help you or what, but he's 70. He's playing the criminologist. Dana is writing something down. Maybe that hint helped her out.
Somebody who's 70.
Yeah, yes. He is 70 years old as of a couple of months ago. Karen wrote something down. Colin wrote something down. Answers up. Dana says Donald Trump. Colin guesses that maybe this is the Ian McKellen question. It was Ian McKellen. Karen writes Tim Curry. Karen is right. It is the trick question.
Oh, that is a trick.
Tim Curry. We'll be playing the
really?
Role of the criminologist in the upcoming Rocky
Once
Horror
you said the age,
remake.
I was like, who would be in this movie that could be in the first movie?
Right. Oh,
there
I
you
thought
go.
He was sick.
You not, got it. Not like, defend.
He, so he is. Yeah. So he had a stroke a few years ago. Mm. He's in a wheelchair, but he's, you know, good enough to play the criminologist.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Awesome. I love Tim Curry.
Oh, who Tim doesn't Curry. Love Tim Curry? Yeah. He... It's a ridiculous question. He won a Tony for his performance of Hamlet in 1995. Now, it's not Royal Shakespeare. You know, he was in the Royal Shakespeare Company, and then later he came to Broadway, and he also played Hamlet, won a Tony. He is also the only actor to have played both the roles of Lord Voldemort and Jesus Christ.
Wow.
Real yin and yang of the this actor.
The only person.
Yes, the only person to ever play both. Karen says Ralph Fiennes. Colin says Ralph Fiennes. Dana says Ralph Fiennes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Not the only actor to have ever played Lord Voldemort.
That's true.
The only. I actually made up that joke. Somebody's now going to write in and say,
"I'm actually
whoever the guy was in the suit, you know, for like Harry Potter." two or whatever also played Jesus in his eighth grade, you know, Sunday school. Maybe. No, Ralph Fiennes was the voice of Jesus in an animated motion picture spectacular about Jesus. This next person, played Romeo in 1986 for the Royal Shakespeare Company, which is appropriate considering his reputation for dying tragically in nearly everything he stars in.
Mm. Whoa. Wait, dying tragically? Not in real life.
Still alive in real life. So many of his characters meet horrific ends. He's renowned for this.
Oh my God.
It was a meme. Yes. You know, a couple of years ago. But he played Romeo in 1986.
Huh.
He was a lot younger then.
I have a guess.
I'm trying to see if the ages work. Actor who has a reputation. Of
I think the ages
dying.
Could work.
Yeah.
If I have the age right.
All
right.
I don't know.
Draw another bear. Half point.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Give me a moment.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Chris is really making Dana work for this bear. I have to say. Yeah.
I'll dance for these points that count.
That's good.
That's better than the first one.
Yeah. Okay, Dana has bear. That's half point. Colin says Sean Bean. Karen says Sean Bean. It is yes, indeed. Yes.
Wow, yes, so is, how old was Sean Bean? In 86?
Probably youngish.
Yeah.
Romeo. This distinctive-looking character actor was in Merry Wives of Windsor, Royal Shakespeare Company, and also played Peter Pettigrew in the Harry Potter films.
Wow, what is his
name? He was also an Enchanted...
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Playing pretty much the same character.
Yeah, basically.
Man, I don't know his name at all.
No.
It's not even...
The Harry Potter clue does not help me in the slightest.
Well, it's basically just who played Peter Pettigrew in the Harry Potter...
Distinctive looking, though. I'm trying to latch onto that.
You know what? If they were to make, like, remake Batman Returns, he would be the new Penguin.
Huh, okay.
He has a very, like, bird ratty face, like...
okay.
Pronounced facial feature. It's
again, I'm sure some people at home get this and they're just like, I got you.
I'm just in the naming British people section of the quiz.
You never
know. Yeah.
You never know. Colin says Pete Postlethwaite. No.
Oh, I love the name.
Karen, thematically appropriately enough, has drawn a rat and gets half a point. And Dana says Rattail McKenzie and draws a picture of what he looks like approximately.
That actually is pretty good.
That's not bad. This actor's name is Timothy Spall.
Oh.
Timothy Spall is his name. Commit that one to memory. And here is one final head scratcher, brain stumper of a question, maybe, unless you know this piece of trivia. This guy played Richard II, Barty Crouch, and Doctor Who.
Oh.
It's a free point for everybody.
Junior.
He's also Barty Crouch. Yes, sorry. Barty Crouch Jr. and Doctor Who.
If it was just Barty Crouch, I'd be like, no. I have my answer, by the way. I'm just drawing.
I'm going to go ahead and say...
The girls have it.
let's put these illustrations down.
It's like a show and tell now.
Dana drew, I think that's Doug, from the Nickelodeon show Doug. But she also wrote David Tennant. Karen wrote David Tennant and drew a TARDIS. Colin wrote Matt Smith.
Oh, the next one. That's the next one.
It was David Tennant.
Okay.
David Tennant was an actor. If you look at pictures of him playing Richard II, he looks like David Tennant with a really bad wig on. It's kind of freaky.
I bet most of them, ended up in Harry Potter, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Anywhere you need some British gravitas.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. A word from our sponsor.
You so sharp blade, I really want to use ya. I got hair sticking out like spikes on King Koopa. I know you're a shaving kit, but please listen to me nah. Top grade, to my face, for not much moolah. No way. Say nay to your body being hairy. Say hey today to a shaving kit from Harry's. Say B to the R to the A-I-N. It's the code for the pro to get a good bargain, $5 off. Harry's.com. YOLO.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles. Smart trivia. Good job, brain.
BFFs. Because I love animals, and, you know, there are a lot of viral videos of, like, weird animals being friends and stuff.
Yes. I was hoping this is the direction that you would go. I really was.
And like, friendship in animals is just, it's so cute. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to read more about, like, do they understand friendship? And,
yeah.
And then I fell into research hole about symbiotic relationships with animals, right? Mm-hmm. These are animal relationships where it's, like, two different types of animals, and they help out each other. And we hear a lot of, like, examples of them. And so I've here two examples of animal BFF, so it seems, in symbiotic relationships.
Okay.
So these are two, and they're very similar for a special reason. So I'm going to introduce you to the Japanese oak blue butterfly in Japan. They're native to Japan. And so when they're the fatty caterpillars, when they're born, they wrap themselves inside leaves of oak trees to protect themselves, because they're kind of like, you know, vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Fat caterpillars are always, they have no defense mechanism.
They can't. I'm not even a bird, and they look tasty to me.
It's like nature's sausages. Nature is a cocktail weenies. Scientists noticed that, like, in order to protect themselves against predators like spiders, wasps, bird, there is a relationship with ants, with this type of ants. Hmm. And these ants would hang out with the caterpillar because the caterpillar will secrete sugar droplets called dew patches, either on them or on the leaf they're on. And the ants would come and, you know, they get fed on the dew patches and in a way kind of guard the caterpillar, the Japanese oak blue caterpillar. And another example we see a lot, especially like in like Lion King or like the when you ever think of like a safari scene, you always see all these big mammals and they have birds on them.
Yeah.
So there's egrets. They're the white birds that like hang out with the rhinoceros. There's another type of bird, and you've seen these before. They're called oxpeckers. Oxpeckers. Well, you know, and named for because they peck on oxes. And
as advertised.
Yes. Yeah. And they're dark gray, and then they have like orangey eyes and beaks. And they hang out with a lot of like large animals, not just oxes. And so in these relationships, the bird will pick out larvae and worm and parasites on the big animal. And also, you know, they get to hang out on the big animal and kind of, you know, it's big.
Right. Right.
That's kind of the protection.
Yeah, it's like being in an SUV.
Yeah, it is. It is on a big Jeep Wrangler. Yeah. So those are two examples of very cute animal BFFs. However, there's a twist in this story.
Okay.
Why these two are very similar. Because these two cases, for the longest time, scientists deemed them as mutually symbiotic relationships, right? They benefit each other.
Okay.
Took a turn. Turns out these relationships are not.
Which one's the selfish jerk in the scenario? Yeah.
So.
Should we try to guess?
Yeah, guess why? Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, why don't you guys spitball? Like, how you know, this is actually not really symbiotic.
I'm going to say that the ants don't actually protect the caterpillar.
They just peace out?
They're just like, okay, thanks for the food, see ya.
If they get hungry, they eat it.
Like, what are they going to do? A bird comes by, the ant is going to fight him off with his ant?
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that. I mean, they might protect him from other ants, maybe, but yeah.
And butterflies aren't usually carnivorous. They wouldn't eat ants or anything.
Yeah, what about the oxpecker, though? Like, that does seem pretty straightforward. Like, the bird's getting food, the ox is getting parasites off his back. Like, maybe...
Sometimes they... like peck so hard it starts eating the ox.
Like it actually does damage.
Or maybe it's like the parasites wouldn't be there if the bird wasn't there.
The bird's bringing farming them on the ox.
Right.
This is dark.
Okay.
What is it?
It's dark. The real life is darker. All right.
No. Okay,
let's go back to our first scenario: the caterpillar and the ants. For the longest time, until last summer. Until last summer, scientists have agreed, yes, this is, you know, they're BFFs. You know, this is proven. Until one scientist in his team in Japan was like, how much benefit does this bring to both parties? What Dr. Hojo noticed was that the ants around the caterpillar they don't seem like they're going back to their nests, and it doesn't seem like they're going anywhere. And then if they do go anywhere, the ones that come back are the same individual ants.
Oh, it's drugging them.
Yes. So the dew patches, the sugary droplets that they're eating, it has sugar in it, but has a whole bunch of other things in it that dopes the ants. And it doesn't stop there. So the ants, they just hang out there. They're just like, oh, this is sore. We're hanging. We're hooked on this stuff. Mm-hmm.
The candy man.
The candy man.
First dew patch is free.
So the caterpillars, you know, some of the caterpillars are, they have like tentacles or they have like weird protruding things
antennae,
and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, they actually had a control experiment. Mm-hmm. They have a bunch of ants that hang out and eat the dew droplets, and they have ants that don't.
Right.
And then they notice that every time
they put little tiny tags on their
tentacles. Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. Yeah.
The caterpillar will sometimes flip its tentacle as a thing that it does. When that happens, the doped up ants go nuts. They go nuts. They get super aggressive, going nuts. And so not only are they doped up and hooked on the sugar water, something about the dew droplets have some sort of dopamine, menacing dopamine effect on them. So when the caterpillar goes, it's go time, and switches on a chemical switch, it turns on the ants into super aggressive like beings. So if there is maybe a big wasp that's like, you know, kind of in the vicinity, caterpillar puts off the switch, the ants just go on attack mode. Like, just looks scary.
They're like remote control mercenaries.
Yes. Yeah. And then they did this experiment with ants that never ate the dew droplets, and no effect.
Wow. Yeah.
No effect. It was not until recently that they're like, turns out they're not friends at all. One's drugging the other.
Just making a slave
zombie
warrior.
Army.
Yeah.
But not even zombie, because they're not dead.
Right, right, right.
They're still alive.
Wow.
That's okay. Dark.
Now let's go back to our second scenario. The ox pecker.
The ox pecker.
Okay. And the ox. Dana's not far. For the longest time, like egrets, those are actually BFFs. Like, they actually do, you know, have a
that's an honorable bird.
Yeah, it's honorable. Yeah. There's debate. They're like, is this actually like mutual symbiotic relationship? So the evidence suggests that the ox peckers are the parasites, because they eat, you know, the worms or the little bugs on big animals, but they notice that they intentionally leave marks. They would peck into the flesh to allow more bugs to grow from their
farming on it.
They're farming. It's their farmland on top.
Wow.
And that, you know, a lot of scientists, they research that, like, the overall number of parasites on the animal actually doesn't really decrease much with their help, because they're actually farming more parasites. And there are some animals, some bigger animals, who catch on. And so when an ox pecker comes, they're trying to flip them away. Yeah. Elephants try to like, get away from me.
That is pretty dark. Yeah, man. Yeah. Just kind of just like, if you're an ox, that's kind of depressing.
So, I mean, these are two examples for the longest time. People are like, yes, oh, wow, they're so great. They're friends. They're helping each other. Mm-hmm. No.
Birds, man.
Birds, man.
Birds. The more we learn about them, the worse they sound.
Oh, yeah. A side story. This is not a BFF, but I found a bird who's, I forgot the name, but the chick looks like, the newborn chin looks like a crazy caterpillar. And it starts to learn how to move like a caterpillar.
Whoa.
And it's like, it's to signal predators that I'm a poisonous, scary caterpillar. Don't eat me. I'm a vulnerable chick, actually.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah.
It's like spiky and has like orange, you know, weird, like, and starts wriggling around. Really weird. Nature's weird.
Nature is amazing.
Crafty.
That feels like that the bird with the ox, that the ox pecker, that feels like a horror thing, like a vampire almost.
Yeah. Well, like, yeah. So some of those ox peckers actually eat the flesh.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet they do.
I mean, they're like, oh, it just so happens the parasite's on flesh.
But, got a little more.
Yeah.
I took some of your flesh off accidentally. Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's change the tone. We got one last segment. Colin, I hope it's a happy one.
It's a little bit lighter with markedly less flesh eating. Significantly less flesh eating in my quiz. So I have a quiz for you about bands, musical acts, because, you know, as you guys know, when you research band histories, many, many, many bands started off as friends, childhood friends.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So this is a common theme. I'm going to give you guys some hints and questions about very well-known recording artists, bands, and who all started off as childhood friends, or at least in their teenage years. And you guys tell me who the band is. So these will be bands from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, even bands still recording today, whoa, Karen, bands that you may have actually heard of. So get your buzzers ready.
Oh, okay.
I'll give you some hints.
Drawing.
Yeah. We started drawing.
I won't stop you from drawing pictures if you want, Dana, okay, but this is a buzzer-oriented quiz.
Will I get points for
I can't rule it out. Yeah, I'm easily swayed. The members of this world-famous rock band met while they were attending Abingdon School in England in the mid-1980s. Before changing their name at the urging of their record label, they were known as On a Friday, a reference to their typical practice day.
Oh.
Huh.
So now remember,
1980s.
So now remember, yeah, because these are bands that met when they were younger, you know, this may be a few years before they became world famous. One of the best-selling recording artists of the 90s and the 2000s.
Wow.
They changed their name to a song by the Talking Heads. Any guesses?
No.
Oh, well, it seems like it's British.
Best-selling
British band.
Yeah, let's work together.
Best-selling artist of the 90s and
2000s. Yeah, Coldplay.
They were
Coldplay?
Yeah. No, not Coldplay. They were named the number two band of the 90s by Rolling Stone readers.
Wow. Garbage. Oh.
Chris.
Oh.
Oasis?
Not Oasis, but you're getting a lot closer. Karen?
Radiohead.
Radiohead.
Oh, I don't know anything about Radiohead.
Well, apparently not. Well, now you do. You know they were called On a Friday. Evidenced. Yes.
Huh. Yeah.
I thought the band was going to be a like Monday, you know, like another day. And so I was like trying to think. I was like,
No, it was just one of those cases where the record label is like, this name is really confusing, really hard to say, right. It's not easily marketable.
On a Friday.
We'll be there on Wednesday.
Yes, right. It's like how, you know, when we go at pub quiz, there's a team sometimes that shows up and they're called and in second place. Right.
Yeah. Right.
This is the most successful vocal group in the United States, with 12 number one hits on the Billboard Hot 100, they are no longer recording. The founding members were all friends and classmates living in the Brewster Douglas housing project in Detroit, Michigan.
Oh.
Dana.
The Supremes?
It is the Supremes.
Oh, I was
gonna say. Yes, that's right. Florence Ballard, Mary Wilson, Betty McGlown, and of course, Diana Ross. They all met through common friends together, and just one of these things like, hey, we should start singing together.
Yeah.
And Motown is like, yes, you should start singing together. Yeah, far and away, the biggest hit for Motown.
How many? 12?
12 number one Billboard Hot 100 hits.
And nothing has taken that record down?
Not in terms of a vocal group.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty amazing, pretty amazing. This six-time Grammy Award-winning musical duo met in secondary school in 1987. They took their current name from a negative review of one of their only rock and roll performances, soon after which they changed musical styles.
Oh, okay. So started out rock and roll.
They're a duo.
Duo.
And when were they active?
They are still active.
Ah. Okay.
Sorry, when did they start being active?
They started being active in the 90s.
Did you say they were British?
I did not say that.
You said secondary school.
Secondary school.
Mm. That seems very British.
Dana.
Daft Punk?
Daft Punk.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God.
Correct.
French.
Dana's got it.
French.
Yes. They have school. They have school in France as well.
But like, we don't call a secondary school. You know what I mean? Like,
I was trying to give you guys a little European nod there. Yeah.
I was like, what sounds like an offensive review? Like a bad review?
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
that's right. Yes. I have heard that bit of trivia.
Dana sunk her teeth into all the clues I was giving her there. Yes, absolutely right. Yeah, they were in a band called Darlin', kind of doing rock style stuff. And they got a negative review that called their performance a daft punky thrash, and they decided to latch onto that.
Man,
and that
look
name.
At them now.
Yes, look at them all the way from.
I wonder how that
Paris,
reviewer
France.
Feels.
Right, you know, probably fine because now he's he can claim that he was.
Yeah, he coined the term.
Yeah, it's the ultimate hipster move. This garage rock duo from Akron, Ohio, have been friends since they were 8 and 9 years old. They recorded their debut album in 2002. Reportedly using cheap microphones they bought on eBay to save money wherever possible. I think Karen first.
Yeah.
White Stripes.
No.
Oh.
Black Keys?
It is the Black Keys. Dana has it. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
My, my colors.
Yeah, colors.
1992?
Debut album 2002.
Oh, 2002. Yeah. Okay.
This New York-based trio, founded by two neighborhood friends, was one of the top-selling acts of the 1990s and had a later career bump in just the last few years on reality TV programs.
Ooh. Oh.
I can give you a hint.
Is it because their song was used or they're on the reality?
They were actually on the reality TV programs, featured. I believe the show was eventually canceled. Karen.
Salt and Peppa.
No.
And Spinderella. Oh.
No.
That was a good guess.
Sorry.
Trio.
Trio.
The trio
you
consisted
love reality
of
shows, Chris.
I do.
Coco, Lily, and Taj.
Oh, What?
Karen.
Sisters with Voices.
Yes.
SWV.
Yes. I will accept either. Yes. Yeah. SWV.
What was the show they were on?
Sisters with Voices.
I'm sorry, 13-year-old Dana.
They had their own they had their own show. I think it's on BET.
Really?
I didn't know they
it's
had their own show.
It's a reality show. Yeah. Oh,
They were my
Sisters
favorite.
Sisters with Voices.
Sisters with Voices.
I torture my fiance in the car singing this.
What were some of their songs?
Don't let go.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not gonna do it. It's bad.
Oh, okay.
He like unrolls the window. He like starts messing with
how
the locks when
help?
I do it.
Okay.
No, because it's a high pitch. It's like in the nasal, in the nose
gotcha.
Area.
This all-girl band emerged from the post-punk scene in the late 1970s. And though they were pretty successful in their native UK, they didn't have a US top 10 hit until their biggest US hit appeared on the soundtrack for the movie The Karate Kid.
Whoa.
Whoa.
All right, rewind that. Do it all again.
This all-girl band emerged in the late 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Successful in the native UK, their first U.S. top 10 hit, and by far their biggest U.S. hit, was on the soundtrack for The Karate Kid. Huh. Chris, we want to take a guess here.
Heart?
Not Heart. Dana.
The Go-Go's?
Not the Go-Go's. Both
British,
American,
though.
Yes. Oh. We're looking for a British band here. Chris, again.
Bananarama?
It is Bananarama.
Oh!
They're the same to me, the Go-Go's.
I was just about to give you the hint.
Yeah.
There are five A's in their name.
Yeah,
but you got it without the hint. Yeah.
And then they formed Shakespeare Sisters. The two of them from Bananarama formed a...
Yeah.
I'm going to write it down.
Karen Woodward and Sarah Dellen from the band have been friends since, I guess, they were 4 years old.
Wow.
So, yeah, going way back. Huh. Yep. All right, last one. This hard rockin' band was founded by two Dutch immigrant brothers in the 1970s.
Immigrant to where?
To here. To the U.S. I'll give you that. And an early version of the band performed under the name Genesis. Before finding it out, it had already been taken.
Oh, I was like, Phil Collins.
Two Dutch immigrant brothers.
Yes. Hard rockin' band.
Hard
rock. So it's two guys who are brothers.
Yeah.
Their last name must be like Vander something. Maybe.
You might be right. Chris.
Van Halen.
It is Van Halen.
Oh!
Thanks, Karen.
Yeah.
Thanks for the assist.
That's good.
I was your James whatever to your LeBron James.
That's right. You were the James Jones. Yeah. That's right. We're a team. Yes. Eddie and Alex Van Halen. They were
immigrants?
The family. Yep. Edward Van Halen was born in Nijmegen and Alex was born in Amsterdam. The family moved here in the early 60s. Yeah. To Southern California.
Huh. That's awesome. Mm.
And they picked up some other members along the way. Sure. They've had a kind of a rotating cast of characters over the years. But
now I gotta go find, I love finding videos of people who you think are like, who are American or raised here, but like they speak another language fluently. I wonder if they speak Dutch. That'd be so crazy. I gotta YouTube that.
I bet they do speak a little Dutch. I bet they do.
To their families and stuff.
Yeah. So they were Genesis, and then they changed the name to Mammoth, and then they changed their name to
Mammoth. That's so metal too.
It's so hard rocks. Yeah. Then finally to Van Halen. It seems so, like what else could they be now? But yeah.
Right.
All right.
Good job, guys. Good job.
And that is our show about BFFs. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about music, about TV BFFs, about the Royal Shakespeare Company, and about fake BFFs in the animal kingdom. You can find our show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.